But up first,
there's a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger.
Yes, our own international man of mystery, Larry Mahoney of the Bangor Daily News, joining us. Hello, Larry.
Hey, Richie. That, of course, was Johnny Rivers with Secret Agent Man. It peaked at number 3. That is one of his 9 top 10 hits and 17 top 40 hits. You remember songs like Baby, I Need Your Lovin', Summer Rain, Swaying to the Music, but that's my favorite. That's my top 100. I never get tired of listening to that song. He was born Johnny Ramostella in New York City, moved to Baton Rouge, where he started playing guitar at age 8. His dad and uncle taught him how to play, formed a band in high school. He ended up going to New York City, and where Alan Freed, a DJ, said, you know, you really should change your name from Johnny Ramostella. You should call it Johnny Rivers because the Mississippi River runs through Baton Rouge. So he did, and just so many good songs. And that's a special song for me. And it's one of those songs, remember, Rich? It's a lot of people thought it was Secret Asian, A-S-I-A-N, man.
Yes.
Instead of Secret Agent Man. There's a term for that, and I know what it is. That was a song that was based on a show called Danger Man in the U.K., and I lived over there and watched this show. And Patrick McGoohan, a well-renowned Irish actor, played Danger Man, and then became Secret Agent Man. But he was such a good actor. And if you remember, he had a really cunning or conniving role as a military school commandant. He was the heavy in a Columbo episode a long way back. But Johnny Rivers, I just want to, as veterans say, I can't thank our veterans enough. I am the son of a veteran. My late father was a Vietnam War veteran. My son, as you know, is a Black Hawk pilot, recently served a year in the Middle East. The people, the sacrifices that the veterans and their families make to keep us safe, there are no words to describe what they mean to us. And I just want to wish everyone a happy Veterans Day. And I am up here right now at the Humane Women Watch Party to see where they're going in the NCAA Women's Soccer Tournament. I am in the brand new Ferland Engineering Education and Design Center. So I'm looking to see if I break out into a rash, because putting me in here is like putting a monkey in a computer lab. And the monkey probably makes more sense in a computer lab than I do in an engineering center. So they're going to Wisconsin. They're going to play the Badgers, University of Wisconsin, on Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern time.
That's fantastic. Well, second straight trip to the NCAA, second straight conference title. And what a job Scott Atherley has done with this program in the last couple of years.
He really has. I mean, and they've currently got they're 16-0-10 or 17-0-10. I mean, they got an unbeaten 17-0-10, I believe, unbeaten streak at Mahaney Diamond. Scott has really epitomized use of a portal. He's brought in so many quality players, from places like the University of Oregon, Florida Gulf Coast College, and they have really solidified this program. And to have the year that they had, 13-1-3, only lost was to Rutgers, which is another NCAA team. So it's been a great ride. And then they played terrific yesterday, beating New Hampshire 3-0, scored 2 goals in the first 12 minutes, and then they got one midway through the second half. So yeah, he's done a terrific job. He really has. And it's fun to watch them. And hopefully in another year or so, they'll have a brand new soccer field if they won't have to play on Mahaney Diamond.
Wait, Scott had quite a weekend too, winning the conference championship, and then Bangor High School with his daughters capturing the state championship in girls soccer.
Yeah, Tegan had a terrific year. I think she was a 37 goal scorer, and her younger sister Kylan, sophomore, who is first year playing a lot because she was hurt last year as a freshman, but she played some. But yeah, they both started, and it's just a terrific weekend. Bangor down 1-0, and then they came back. Gabby Roy tied it. They were playing Scarborough, who beat them 2-0 last year, and The game-winning goal and the insurance goal were scored by Georgie Stevenson, the freshman granddaughter of Gabby Price. So, and she's built like her granddad, and she's as tenacious as her granddad. She's a terrific talent, and keep an eye on her in the future because she's a finisher. And but that whole team, it's just a really good soccer team. Four really quick athletes in the back. Very good midfield with Clara Oldenburg and Tegan Astley. And then up front, they had Georgie. They had a bunch of players up front, Aislinn Gifford and, you know, Georgie Stevenson and Kylan Astley played up front. So, but their backs are very good. The goaltender was really good. I mean, just a really impressive win for Jay Kemble in just his second year as a head coach. And, again, they got to the state last year. But to all the state champions, the Penobscot Valley girls defended their state title. They've won two in a row now. So, I mean, just it's a fun time of year. We still have high school football playoffs, but, you know, we got a lot going on with Maine hockey. Obviously, Maine men's and women's basketball are playing. So just, as you know, a very, very good time of year. And a very good win called by Rich Kimble and Bob Lucy. Kind of a strange second half, but didn't matter. You get up 35-0, and all that matters is a W, and that's what the Maine football team had this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Larry Mahoney with us here on Downtown. Well, let's talk about football, then we'll get to hockey. Yeah, Maine getting sure. that win. It was a great first half effort. I don't know. I asked Jordan what happened in the second half, whether it was maybe a lack of focus, this, that, and the other thing, but the Bears still took care of business. And again, you know, Larry, in the CAA, you take your foot off the gas, teams will come back. This was a Bryant team that nearly beat Stony Brook, lost in overtime last week. But the Bears, the difference between this year's Bears and the last couple is they're finding a way to win those games. Now 5-5, and
yes.
I don't think completely out of the playoff picture with the way the conference is breaking down going forward. If Maine can win these last two, and if they get a little help from Monmouth, Maine could be tied for third place in the CAA and would potentially own tiebreakers over two of those other teams, Villanova and New Hampshire.
Yeah, and that would be huge. And that's why this game, probably, Rich, is probably one of the most important games in Jordan Stevens' three-year career upcoming here at Elon. Elon has scored 90 points in his last two games, explosive offensively, 4-6 overall, 3-3 in the conference, but as Maine is, 3-3 in the conference. So, but like you said, if they can get the win over Elon, now, I mean, you couldn't have a better scenario because New Hampshire is 6-4 and 4-2 respectively. So, I mean, that, you know, there's always, both teams could be 0-10 going into the Maine-New Hampshire game and it's still going to be special. But to have something on the line, I mean, it would basically be a playoff game because, you know, again, I'm sorry, I should have checked. I don't know who New Hampshire's playing this weekend.
They've got Stony Brook this weekend, which is huge for both teams.
There or at UNH?
It's at UNH.
Okay. Yeah, that's huge. Then, I mean, that is, yeah, I mean, yeah. But, you know, that's going to be interesting. There have been a lot of interesting games. You know, the Monmouth-New Hampshire game was huge this past weekend that New Hampshire won. So, but, yeah, no, they still have a chance. They have a chance. I mean, you look at their losses. I mean, they lost to Oklahoma. You throw that out. They lost to Delaware, and I don't know how people regard that, since Delaware has more scholarships and isn't because they're making the transition to FBS and isn't allowed to play in the postseason. They lost to Montana State, who is 10-0 and ranked second in the country right now. So, I mean, yeah, that's a pretty good body of work, winning, beating Villanova, beating Albany, who was ranked at the time. And then, you know, if you can beat Elon and New Hampshire, I mean, now you're looking at 7-5. You throw out the Oklahoma game, 7-4. You know, you can, I don't know what you, you know, and then you're, and then again, with strength of schedule, Montana State. So now you're looking at a team, like you said, Rich, they are probably going to need some help. I mean, they've got an outside chance. I mean, but again, it's going to be a huge task down at Elon. It's a game they have to win, and they're going to have to shut down a very high-powered offense, at least one that's been high-powered. Mm. Of late, but they do give up a lot of points too.
But it's such an important game, as you said, this weekend, because just as they could go 7-5 and have a shot at the playoffs, you've come so far this season. What you can't afford to do is drop these last two and end up going 5-7. And while it's still progress, it just doesn't feel as good.
Yeah, and I think you can tie that in with the hockey team, the main hockey team. I mean, remarkable, you know, to have the cut turnaround they had last year. But I know losing to BU in the semifinals of the Hockey East and then losing to Cornell again, both games. Cornell was a tough loss because that's a winnable game. You're up 1-0, you got a 5-minute power play, and you don't convert. But yeah, it kind of leaves a bitter taste in your mouth if you go out with two losses, you know, no matter what the circumstances. And I know Jordan wants to build on something. So I'll tell you what, if they could win these two, and whether or not they get in or not, to finish like they did really gives Jordan, his staff, and the players, the returning players, something to really rally around and momentum for next season.
Well, I made this statement the other day, and I stand by it. I think Maine just came off, prior to the Bryan game, what has to be the toughest five-game stretch in the history of the program. You played three nationally ranked FCS opponents. You played a Delaware team that would be ranked if they were eligible. Played Oklahoma, and four of those five were on the road.
Very much so. Yeah, I don't think there's nobody. What did I see? Didn't they say Maine, right, going into this weekend, I think had the seventh toughest strength of schedule in the FCS.
Yeah, the seventh toughest, and the other teams that are in playoff contention in the conference are all like the 60th, 73rd toughest. Yeah. They've got fairly cupcake schedules outside CAA play.
Well, let me throw this. We chatted about this last week. They play usually two FBS teams. One of the few FCS teams that plays two FBS teams. I know the coaches are good with one, but not two because of the travel. But by the same token, financially, I mean, they're bringing in $900,000 this year, from roughly $900,000 from their trips to Montana State and to Oklahoma. What's your thoughts? What are your thoughts on it? Should they keep playing two for the money? Are you good with one, or what are your thoughts?
I'm good with one, and I would say, look, unless it's a year like this year and next year when they have 12 games on the schedule, I think in a typical 11-game season, take your money game and then load up on the Stonehills of the league, the LIUs, teams that you can beat and teams that will come to Orono to play at least, you know, two out of every three games, because it's tough. I mean, you're not only playing 12 games this year, but seven of the 12 on the road. And I know from talking with Jude Kelly, one thing he wants to do, wherever the money's coming from, he wants to keep it as much as possible in the Eastern time zone, so you're not crossing the country to play games.
That's good too. Yeah, that makes sense too, Rich, because that's one thing the coaches, one of the things they talked about is the travel. Look at where they played. They've played Nebraska. They've played Oklahoma. They've played, New Mexico State.
Yeah, and this year alone, by the end of the season, Maine will have traveled, I think, close to 20,000 miles this year.
Yeah, that's tough. And, you know, again, it's a very physical sport, and you're a lot of times you're cramped on these planes or buses and stuff. And, yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense, playing one. And then, and then you can also, but teams don't want to come to Orono. Because it'd be nice if you could work out a home-and-home with a really good FCS team.
They did with Montana back in the early 2000s, and that was great.
Yep.
Well, we'll see what happens going forward. But, yeah, there are some good teams in the East, the ACC, some of the teams they've played in that past, like Pitt, Syracuse, back to Buffalo, Virginia Tech.
I think they got BC. There's a website.
They've got two with BC in 2026 and I believe in 2030.
I think they've got Central Florida, too.
Yep, Central Florida, Liberty, Georgia Southern, Akron is on the schedule.
Okay, yep. Those are good. Those are doable.
Yeah. And again, the travel, you'll take the money, you'll take the fact that if you win, it's an upset, as long as you don't have to be out there traveling 3,000 miles to get it done.
No question.
Let's talk a little hockey, Larry. Boy, tough weekend for the Blackbears, especially that Friday night game. Boy, it felt like they had it, and then two quick goals, and next thing you know, you're getting swept out of the building.
Yeah, that was a frustrating one. I mean, that's a game. That's a game you have to win. I mean, if you're going to be a national championship team, that's a game you have to win. You're up You're up 2-0 midway through the period. You take an offensive zone penalty. You can't be taking offensive zone penalties. But earlier in the game, BC had a 5-minute power play, and Maine outshot them 5-0 and had 3 break-ins on that. I mean, right then you're saying this is a team. This is a team that could win the national championship. And then again, they're close, but then you give up the power play goal. And then they score with 3 minutes left, and then okay, you're getting ready, you're going to go overtime. Let's see if you can get at least get a point out of it. And then you know they make a mistake, give them a 2-on-1, and a first round draft pick buries the puck, Ryan Leonard. So that's a loss. I mean, that see, and remember Quinnipiac, they were up 4-1 and found themselves down 5-4 with less than a minute left. They tied it and then won it in overtime, but. Yeah, I mean, they've got to play better with a lead, obviously. That's one thing. And then the second night, Sunday afternoon, yesterday afternoon, I guess, from what Ben Barr told me, they just didn't play very well. And they just didn't generate much offense. And, you know, BC just really controlled the game. And so, it's back to the drawing board in some regards. I mean, again, they're now 1-2-1 on the road. So they've got to, you know, again, they've got to address that. The positive, Rich, is if after this weekend, They will have BC and BU out of the way, and those are the two teams picked atop the preseason standings. But every team's good in hockey. I mean, even the cellar dwellers are more competitive than cellar dwellers in other conferences. So I mean, it's I think it's the best league that and NCHA National Collegiate Hockey Conference. That's a very good one too. So and the Big Ten, but they're not quite there yet. They're getting there. You've got to play. If you're going to win a national championship, you know, you've got to learn to protect the lead. And you've got to learn to match, you know, the other team's, intensity. I mean, BC has more talent. I mean, they've got 12 draft picks. Maine has 1. Now the difference why Maine's able to compete and why I think Maine can beat BC is because Maine's older. BC's got all these first-round draft picks, but there's 18, 19 years old. Maine has a bunch of 22, 23-year-olds. So I came out of that series saying, yeah, if they meet in the Hockey East tournament or in the NCAAs, Maine can go toe-to-toe with them. But again, the margin of error is slimmer for Maine than it is BC because, you know, each team gets 10 scoring opportunities. Maine may score on 3. BC's going to score on 5 because, again, they have high-end talent. But like I said, if Maine can grind and play their style, and I was curious how they would respond on Sunday to Saturday night, and apparently they just didn't. From what I was told, they just didn't respond very well. They didn't generate many chances, it's going to be gut check time. Take a look in the mirror, see what you got to do to get to that next level. You showed on Friday night that you're every bit as good as that you can hold your own with BC, play your style, and shut them down. And they did it for 50 minutes. But the last 10 minutes, things fell apart. So, as Ben Barr said, we move on, we learn from it, we grow from it. And that's what he's going to do. So, again, great series this weekend at home with BU coming in.
Absolutely. By the way, Secret Agent Man, I was going to tell you, yes. Written by friend of our show, the late P.F. Sloan, who also played that guitar part at the opening of the record.
Yeah, and Steve Barry, I think there were two.
Yes.
He was one, you're right. He was one of the co-writers of that song. And from what I was reading about him, boy, and you had him on the show, he's had quite a career.
He wrote a lot of hits. At 18, he wrote Eve of Destruction.
Oh, by the Byrds.
Barry McGuire.
Barry McGuire, that's right, Barry McGuire.
And he and Steve Barry were... at least on their first record, they were the grassroots. They wrote a couple songs, and there was no band. And so he and Steve Barry went in the studio, and they were all of the artists. And then I think it was Where Were You When I Needed You, which became
That was a good tune.
Yeah.
Grassroots had Sooner or Later. Grassroots had a lot of good hits.
Well, it became a huge hit, but there was no band, and they had to go out on tour. And so that's when they grabbed some session musicians and a guy named Rob Grill, who they made the lead vocalist because he sounded enough like P.F. Sloan that people would buy it, and they sent him out on the road.
But they've had other situations like that where they had bands that they had a hit, but they really didn't have a band, so they really couldn't tour.
Right. Absolutely. It happened a lot back then.
But yeah, I think who were some of the bands like that?
Well, all those bands that had Tony Burrows as the lead singer.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That's right. Edison Lighthouse. Oh, yeah.
Well, and there was a big instrumental hit, too. Do you remember the instrumental hit Out of Limits by the Marquettes?
Oh, sure.
That was they weren't a real band. That was the Wrecking Crew, all those studio musicians in L.A.
Yeah. That's one thing I've looked for and I haven't found. I mean, I unveiled on Sirius Radio. Remember the song Kemosabe?
Yeah, I do. Yes.
Yeah, by Electric Indian.
Yeah.
There's so many good. We talked about Booker T and the MGs, Green Onion. So many. Just Hawaii 5-0 by The Ventures. I would love to have an album with double CD with all the great instrumental hits.
We did a whole night.
Yeah, Love Is Blue.
A couple of weeks ago, we did a whole night on our Saturday night show of instrumental hits. And Doug went out of the archives. Do you remember I Was Kaiser Bill's Batman?
No, not really.
By Whistling Jack Smith.
Oh, okay. I remember Whistling Jack Smith. I remember. Yeah, okay.
Here, yeah. Let me see if I can find it for you, because you'll remember it, because I remembered it when I was a kid. Let me see if I got it here. Oh, here it comes. Here it comes. Let's see if we can call it up and play a little of it for you here.
Sure.
You'll know it. You'll know it in seconds, because I've got to get through a commercial here. Here we go. Oh, from some German television performance here.
I do remember that. you know what that intro sounds like? What song does that remind you of?
Winchester Cathedral.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, Richard. Yes, sir.
Which had come out the previous year and was a number one song for the new Vaudeville Review.
Yes. That's a great one, too. I always liked that. Yeah, very clever and, you know, just really, really cool, special little song.
Well, we'll dig into the archives again next time. Talk a little sports and a little music as well. Larry, great chatting with you as always. Thanks for joining us on your day off today.
Well, thank you very much. I always enjoy hanging with you and bringing back some musical memories. Whistling Jack Smith, and then let us right into the new Vaudeville band.
There you go. We'll talk with you soon, Larry. See you at the next football game,
Rachel.
Too. Bye-bye. Larry Mahoney, Bangor Daily News, with us here on Downtown.